Apple's grown to become a very sophisticated marketing company. We do research on our brand awareness, advertising recall, market share. But I received a letter from a 6.5-year-old boy a few months ago, which to me completely sums up what we've accomplished in the last few years. And it reads, "Dear Mr. Jobs, I was doing a crossword puzzle and a clue was, as American as Apple blank. I thought the answer was computer, but my mom said it was pie."
Cassie Best, 30 plus minute Apple conversation. You're gonna hear all week long. I'm your host, Irfan Elijah. Joining me today, that isn't dandruff on his shoulder. It's just the powder from his white wig. Leander Caney is here.
Oh, that's another white powder you're gonna mention, but
well, I didn't want to tell anyone that you do cocaine, which is true, but I didn't want to out you here on the show. And how you get it on your shoulder is actually a really fun story as well. Also with us, if you've never seen 4K aerial footage of a nude man hiking in the wilderness, you're going to want to stay tuned for his Mavic Pro drone review. Buster Kine is here.
Hey, man.
Dude, those drones are changing the game, aren't they?
Oh, total game changer.
The stuff that you can do with drones now, I mean, it's like movie quality aerial footage that you would have had to have a helicopter to get 10 years ago.
Just so smooth and sexy.
It's so smooth and so sexy. And of course, Buster's taking full advantage and dropping some hot 4K footage that he'll be talking about later in the show. He got his hands on the DJI Mavic Pro and he's been playing around with it for a week. So we'll hear about that. And you know, Buster and I both love drones. We're drone fans. Which is funny because neither of us have ever even owned a drone.
I think we're gadget fans mostly, you know, and it's I think those are the coolest gadgets right now for me.
Yeah. I agree with you. Yeah, they're some of the most exciting pieces of technology today. And of course, DJI, this is going to sound like hyperbole, but I really think it's true. I think DJI is like the Apple of the drone industry right now.
Oh, for sure.
Dude, they're releasing such hot tech and they're iterating so fast and you know, their stuff has really been impressing me. In any case, we are going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about the MacBook Pro reviews. They're out. They're out, people. If you stay tuned, we'll also talk about the $785 Apple designed by Apple in California book. I know some of you scoff at the price, which I think is unfair because, you know, the book has... what is it? Ghost-free inks?
Right. And specially mailed paper from Germany. It's milled and dyed, and it's faced in matte silver.
That's right. So, you know, now you feel stupid for making fun of the price. And Leander got his hands on one. Of course. Of course, Leander was probably one of the first people to go spend his money on the $300 book. $300 for that book, Leander. I'm looking forward to hearing you justify that.
Okay.
which he's going to, you all know.
Right. And, I'm going to defend it to the death.
I'll be honest, I actually kind of want one. But okay, so before we hop into all that good stuff, let me go ahead and say thank you to Harry's for supporting this episode. Harry's super sharp, German-made razors ship free right to your door for way less than drugstore razors. And you can order a free trial set right now at harrys.com. And actually, if you do, all you have to do is pay the shipping and they will send you a free trial set right to your door if you use the code CULTCAST at checkout. Why should you check out Harry's? Well, unlike other big razor companies that have the annoying habit of putting out new models and then raising their already high prices, Harry's doesn't do that. They don't believe in upcharging. They actually went out and bought an entire German factory so they can make the razors themselves and ship them to you for half the price of what you'd pay in the drugstores and even on Amazon. Their five-blade razors are now upgraded too. They have five blades. They have a softer flex hinge for a more comfortable glide. They have a trimmer blade for those hard-to-reach places. Lubricating strip, oh yeah. Textured handle for more control when it's wet. And they're still just $2 per blade, which is about half the price of what you'll pay elsewhere. I think Harry's makes a great product. One of the most high-quality razor sets I've ever owned. And especially for the price, I don't know if you'll find a better set for the price that they charge. Very well made. harrys.com, and the offer code is CULTCAST, and you will get a free trial set. So you can check it out for yourself. You know, don't take my word for it. Try it out for yourself and see if you like it. And if you do, then you can get razor blades at a frequency that you choose sent right to your home each month. Thanks to Harry's for supporting this episode. Where should we start? Let's start with these new MacBook Pro reviews. Leander, what was your impression? What was your takeaway from all these different review roundups?
Well, I don't know. It seems to me it's the same old we've been hearing for a few weeks, right? You know, people complaining that it's like, you know, too few ports and it's not for everybody. It's, you know, there are too many compromises. And I was just sort of like, well, yeah, I don't know, you know.
Okay.
They weren't. None of them were very enthusiastic.
That was one of my big takeaways. Was not a single one of them was enthusiastic.
But they're always like that, though. I mean, you know, the pro tech reviewers, they're always so, you know, quote unquote even handed. You know, every time the iPhone 7 review, the iPhone 6 review, the 6S, you know, it's always the same, isn't it? It's, you know, they're always like they try to balance it, and so it's the conclusion is always exactly the same. It's beautiful, but it's not for everyone.
That pretty much exactly summarizes everything that I've read so right. far.
So I don't know. I'm always kind of skeptical. I haven't got a chance to go check them out. I mean, I really want to go and look at one in the store and play around with it to see it for myself.
Yeah, I haven't actually gotten a chance to do that either. I went and they didn't have them at my Apple store yet, so I need to go back. Buster, what do you think?
Yeah, kind of like Leander said, I saw Casey Neistat's video on his, and he didn't seem super impressed by it. He said the ports were, and the dongle situation was super annoying.
The dongle sitch.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I'm definitely just going to sit out on at least a year. And I think it'll be better in 1 or 2 years. It'll be more affordable, and there'll be more stuff for the touch bar.
That was one of the big things, is some people really love the touch bar, and they saw the usefulness of it. In fact, Ars Technica wrote, "The more I use the touch bar, the more I become convinced of its potential utility." But notice the word potential, right? Right. I mean, it just doesn't really do a whole lot yet, because like the Apple Watch, like the Apple TV, I think Apple's pushing this tech out there with a limited amount of functionality, and they're hoping, fingers crossed, y'all, that developers are going to make good use of it. And at this point, of course, they don't know what to do with it because it's so brand new. So some people have loved the Touch Bar. Walt Mossberg, a.k.a. Malt Wasberg, he described the Touch Bar as having potential, but it's not magic. So even the huge Apple fan, Malt Wasberg, even he wasn't super jazzed by it. So I think a lot of people are still kind of waiting to see what happens with it in the long run. Wired said the new MacBook Pro is a terrific laptop. Let's go through the good stuff, right? The good stuff first. It's super skinny, a clear indication of where most of the computer world is going, but it comes with growing pains. TechCrunch said the less celebrated spec bumps are what make the new Pro a worthy upgrade. Better processors, more storage, a brighter display, and better speakers are all wrapped up in a sleeker, lighter package than before. The touch bar feels like a nice bonus. Ars Technica also praised the industry-leading storage performance. The SSDs on this Mac are faster than I think anything else on the market. And a really a nice upgrade over the 13-inch, the Wi-Fi has been increased in speed from 867 megabits per second to 1.3 gigabits per second, which is actually, in all truthfulness, is the same as the 2015 MacBook Pro. So it's not exactly a huge upgrade, but that's super fast Wi-Fi. I would like to see some actual performance tests, because that is faster than actual Ethernet. If it's really 1.3 gigabits per second, that would be amazing. Let's talk about some of the bad stuff. The Wall Street Journal said it's a dongle nightmare. Dongle nightmare. SD card slot is particularly missed. One of the most important aspects of this machine to me, or I should say one of the things that disappointed me the most, you guys probably aren't going to be surprised by this, R said the CPU performance increases by an amount that's roughly proportionate to a 200 megahertz maximum clock speed increase, and the GPU performance increases about 10%. It's not nothing. That was their statement about that. So the CPU and GPU performance, it's not nothing. They gave you a little bit of a spec bump.
That's a ringing endorsement, isn't
it? But the CPU has been really disappointing. I got to say, this is not entirely Apple's fault, because Intel has been focusing on efficiency. And so Apple uses Intel chips, and they can only use what Intel releases. So unfortunately, in the last 3 or 4 years, it just seems like Intel hasn't really been building a lot of performance into their new mobile processors. And so you just haven't really seen very much speed increase. I mean, the fact that you can get a 2012 MacBook Pro and it's almost as fast, like within 10% performance-wise, of this 2016 model, I think is just staggering. I find that hard to fathom when you're spending as much money as you are for a new MacBook Pro. Let me wrap up with this one last piece of information. This is going to echo what Buster just said. This is from the Wall Street Journal. A touch bar, touch ID, and a new design are tempting, but you'll get the same performance and battery life as with the older model. So how do you decide? Do you invest in the present, the old MacBook Pro with performance, good enough portability, a keyboard to cherish, and lots of ports? Or do you invest in the future, a beautiful, highly portable machine with new tricks? Or maybe you do what I'm doing. You stare down at your 3-year-old laptop and you wonder if you can tough it out for another year or two while this all sorts itself out. And that is precisely where I stand. This looks like an incredible machine. It's going to be, and Leander, you said this in the last two shows, it's going to be a great machine in the next few years as the technology, the peripheral technology catches up. But the touch bar has limited usefulness at this time. Apple is hoping that's going to change, but we have yet to see if that is true. And if you don't need to upgrade, this is what almost all the reviews said. If you don't need to upgrade, don't do it because you're probably better off sticking with what you already have. But if you have a 2006 or 2009 MacBook Pro, as some of y'all have on Twitter that have been reaching out to me, hats off to you, hat tip to all of you for keeping the machine going that long, then this is going to be a very good upgrade for you, even though it's not perfect. For you, it's going to be a huge, massive upgrade, and you are going to love it. You're going to love it. And I think this one feature alone might make the MacBook Pro upgrade worth it for all of you. Some of you may have heard, if you have the new MacBook Pro with Touch Bar, you can actually skip through and scrub through the YouTube ads.
Well, that...
I can't believe that alone. That people are so stoked about that.
I am.
Well, that's not good. The one review I liked actually was on Back Channel, you know, on Medium, written by Stephen Levy. The one where he got to talk to Phil Schiller.
Oh, I didn't hear about that one.
It was quoted earlier in the week because, you know, Schiller said a couple of things that were, you know, that people picked up as news stories and blog posts. But he talked to him a little bit about, you know, the sort of the design decisions they made. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was saying like the dongle situation, their position is that very, very few people are actually going to be using dongles. And you know, as like we said, you know, when more peripherals use the USB and the Thunderbolt connection, then you know that issue will go away. So it's kind of like a temporary situation. You know, Phil Schiller was arguing, which kind of resonated. But anyway, Stephen Levy was saying that it was worth the price just for one feature, just one thing was worth it. Do you know what it was?
Let me guess. The comically large trackpad.
No, Buster. Any guesses?
No.
Touch ID.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because of passwords. He said it you don't have to enter passwords anymore.
I could see that.
I've heard that people have had mixed success with the Touch ID, though, and some websites allow you to use it. Some will make you type in your password. And that was kind of how it was on the iPhone when it first implemented Touch ID. Like, you weren't really able to use it everywhere, and now I feel like that's changed, and you can use it a lot more. But that would be super useful, not having to type in your password every time you get to a website or something and just use Touch ID, or especially having to log into your computer, with your password. That's one of the reasons I started wearing my Apple Watch again. For that sole reason, it's just that I'm too lazy to type in a password.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened to us? What happened to us as men? Can I just say that?
Yeah.
People used to like chop logs. They used to build their own homes. They used to like farm with their bare hands. And now you have guys like me who are too lazy to type in a password so that I can shop on Amazon. I should be embarrassed. I'm not, though. I'm actually proud of that.
Good for you. I'm proud of you, too.
Thank you. So there you have it. I'm not trying to discourage anyone. I hope you guys don't think that I'm trying to take a big dump on the new MacBook Pro. Because I want one. I really want one. It's just for me personally in my situation with the MacBook Pro that I have, it's not worth it for me. But I realize for many of you with older Macs, it's going to be an amazing upgrade for you. And so To each their own, right? So I just want to give you guys the information so you can make your own decision. And I think regardless, even if you have a newer Mac and you decided to upgrade to this one, I don't think anyone's going to be disappointed with this machine. I don't see how you could be. I mean, once you get it, you're going to fall in love with it. And it's going to have that lust factor, just like every other piece of Apple machinery, where you feel like a real tangible sense of like love for it. And if your house is on fire, you're wondering if you should save it or one of your family members. You're going to have that same attachment to it, I think. So there you have it. Let's talk about this this new Designed by Apple in California book, Leander. This is weird, isn't it? So I find the timing a little strange. When Steve Jobs came back from Next to take over Apple, he had like this whole collection of Apple technology that had been saved, donated to, I think, Stanford. And he's famously said, Apple focuses on the future. We don't focus on our past. And there's never really been an homage by Apple to remember the things that they made, honor their amazingly long, successful design history. And then they all of a sudden come out with this book that does exactly that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it looks like a super cool book, even though it's, you know, $199 for the 13 inch model, and then $300 for the 13 inch by 16 inch, the model, the book. Well, as one of our listeners said, I forget who said this. He's like, leave it to Apple to make an Apple history book and then an Apple history book pro.
Right.
Why do you think they did this now?
The book?
Yeah.
Well, you know, they said it's been 8 years in the making, and I heard about it when I was doing interviews for my Johnny Ive book. They were talking about doing it then, and they've been doing this sort of cataloging project for 8 years. So I would have said, you know, why not before? I think it looks like, you know, with a typical attention to the detail they put into everything, they put the same attention to detail into this book. You know, as we were joking about earlier, it's made on special custom paper from Germany.
It's German milled paper, of course. Right. It's made in Germany.
And then the inks were specially developed by
Low Ghost inks. I don't even know what that means.
I haven't got a clue either.
It's got gilded matte silver pages. We don't even know what this stuff means, and it already makes us want to spend $300 on a book.
Right, exactly. And then it's all linen bound. And the thing, you know, I've got the bigger one, and it must weigh 20 pounds. It's wow. Huge. It's like two hands to pick it up.
Did you get it from the Apple store, or did you order it online?
It was sent to me.
Oh, they just sent you one.
Well, Johnny Ive sent it to me.
You're kidding.
I got a handwritten note on it.
You're kidding? From Johnny Ive?
Yeah.
Nice. You're joking.
No, I'm not.
This is the lavish lifestyle of Leander Caney, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the way he lives his life. He just gets handwritten books from Johnny. Hey, right. Leander, I love you. You love the podcast. Keep right. up the good work.
Can you give me a shout out on the podcast? Yeah, he said.
Big fan.
Can you pimp out my book on the podcast?
Yeah,
you
know? Precisely. Precisely.
That's what he said.
That's amazing. So, Did he actually say that?
The envelope, it just said, you know, I hope you like the book. Best, Johnny. He's got very distinctive handwriting, like really, really long tails and heads on his, you know, on the letters. So
his handwriting is probably very specifically crafted,
right? it actually had an embossed seal, like a heraldic seal,
like the Ive family seal.
Yeah, exactly.
But sealed with his own wax and his Apple ring.
Yeah,
that's what he used to send memos to Tim Cook.
No wax, but it definitely had that seal on it. So, and I think, you know, I don't know if the Ive. Yeah, I gotta look into it. I actually wrote to him. I sent him an email thanking him for the book, and then asking him about the seal, and I haven't actually looked to see if he responded.
Can we just stop for a moment? hold on. I realize we're not glazing over this fact that you got a autographed book from Johnny Ive, but the artifact that you now have, can you imagine how valuable that is? I mean, that is like a family heirloom. Am I being hyperbolic here?
Yeah, because he didn't actually. It was only, unfortunately, he didn't sign the book. He signed a card that was accompanied the book.
Oh, okay. He didn't sign the book itself.
So yeah, the book.
But still,
right? Yeah,
That's incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
That's incredible. I mean, that's something that I would keep in a safe. That's amazing.
Well, I already got it all stained.
Is it covered with Cheeto dust now?
Yeah, I put it on the kitchen table, which is covered in some kind of schmoo, jam or
you're
something.
You're kidding me. That is sacrilege. I cannot believe that you did that.
It got into that fine German linen that it's bound in.
So I would be wearing one of those outfits that they wear at Intel when they're making the processors. Right. That's what I'd be wearing. And I would never let anyone look at the book or touch the book.
Yeah,
definitely
without
read the book.
Gloves on, right.
Yes. It'd be in a temperature controlled safe with security around it.
It's already got jam all over it. And I couldn't get it out. I tried to scrub it out. I just spread it around a bit more.
Try putting it in the washer. Let's see. I mean, it's made of linen, right? Maybe you could wash it out.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So you got this amazing book for free, and it looks like an incredible archive of Apple's history. They include, it chronicles 20 years of different product designs, and it goes behind the scenes, right?
Sort of,
different products were made.
Yeah.
A little bit. Okay, so a little bit of history.
It's mostly it's 450 photographs. Most of them are big, sort of really that signature, you know, high contrast, white background studio shot of these products. There are some shots of the tools that they used to make them. So there's a shot of a polishing wheel that they used to polish the back of the first iPod.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a picture of a die, the mold. For a later iPod, for a plastic iPod, and then some drill bits and so on and so forth. And the trouble is that you don't really know what you're looking at. You know, like I flicked through the book and I was like, oh, what's this? And, you know, for a lot of them, I had no clue until I got to the back of the book. And then there in the back of the book, there's like a separate booklet, and it's like a 6-page booklet. And it's actually printed on weird, it almost feels like newsprint.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely sort of cheaper, you know, more fibrous paper, but it's tucked away at the back. And then there's a whole bunch of detailed notes, you know, on all of the different photographs in the book. And it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, so then you have to open the book. So you have to have two books to make sense of it. You have to open the book, you know, and then you have to get this other book, and then you have to cross-reference it, you know, like at page 150 to 151. Oh, okay, you know, and there's the note to tell you what you're looking at. So it's a bit weird, a bit strange. And I don't know if this is how they do, you know, like, I was going to look this up. You know, I think maybe this is how they do designer monographs, maybe. But, you know, for a reader, anyway, it makes it sort of difficult to actually go through and figure out what you're looking at. And this is, of course, like the big disappointment. You know, there's no interviews, there's no explanation, there's no context, or very little. The notes really, you know, they're kind of technical, but they don't really... you know, explain.
So you're not really sure what you're looking at as you're going through it.
No. And then, you know, like having interviewed the designers for my book and, you know, read some, and all the stuff that's been printed, you know, the design process is, I think particularly their design process is really fascinating because of the way they work and the way they solve problems. And this, I think, you know, really is what people want to know is that kind of narrative, you know, like,
yeah,
how did you know, what were all the trials and tribulations of designing the iPhone? Because it took, you know, 3 years of really fraught effort, lots and lots of problems, lots and lots of things went wrong. You know, what's that story? I think that's a story that people really want to know, rather than looking at
But you could
pictures.
Probably write a whole book just on that.
Well, right, exactly. You could. And I tried to.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, you did.
The genius behind the Apple's greatest project. And, I'm proud of that book, and I think it was successful. I mean, I got a huge breakthrough because I got to talk to one of the designers, Doug Satzker, who worked there for these 20 years, and he gave me a lot of detail about how they worked and about, you know, and about the trials and tribulations of the iPhone and a whole bunch of other products besides. So, you know, I think there's some great stuff in the book, and this is kind of what I was thirsting for in this book was more of that. And especially from the official source. And of course, you know, like Walter Isaacson's book about Steve Jobs, I mean, it didn't touch on any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big criticism of the book.
Well, do you think that maybe they're trying to, that's kind of their special sauce. Do you think maybe they're trying to keep that
right
a little bit more secret?
This is exactly why it is. And this is what I think, this is why I think it is because that is an industrial secret.
Right.
And Apple keeps that under wraps. And this is why Johnny Ive, you know, talks in those weird sort of, you know, kind of, you know, unspecific, these kind, you know, those kind of designer cliches. Mm-hmm. You know, the couple of times that I've been, one time when I talked to him about the G5 Power Mac, you know, years ago, he was really specific. He didn't talk like that at all. He was swearing, you know, it was very concrete. It was very specific. Uh-huh. You know, he gave me a whole tour of this machine, right? The PR people were freaking out, but he was so geeked out on this whole stuff he was so into it that he just couldn't help himself. And then, you know, by contrast, when you see him on stage or in those videos and he talks these kind of, you know, in sort of designer cliches, these platitudes about striving and the best they could do and all this kind of stuff, you know, he doesn't really talk like that, but I think he's compelled to talk like that. This is really fascinating.
So there's like two Johnny Ives. There's the one that we see, which is like the version of him when he's spending time visiting the Queen, right?
Right.
And then there's the I'm at the bar drinking with Johnny Ive, Johnny right. Ive, where he's swearing.
Yeah.
He might grab you by the pee. He might pull a Donald J. Trump and accost you. Is he just totally different when he kind of lets his guard down?
Yeah, he's totally different. He's much more straightforward and much more, you know, much more down to earth. He is a very down to earth guy, even though he's not Sir Johnny Ive. He's really, really into design and into making products. And I was, you know, really fascinated about all these details, you know, all these problems that they had, and all the things they did. You know, the G5, it was one of the first machines the first desktop machine that this design team worked on. And you know, because you could take the door off, they decided that, well, if, you know, a lot of people. So they decided to design the insides too, the entire circuit board, all the, you know, hard drive bays, the heat sinks for the chips. The chips were laid out, and this was like Jobs' dream from the very get-go. Remember, he had a famous tantrum about the Apple II. You know, some of the early Apple circuit boards, you know, they weren't laid out in a really nice symmetrical manner, and he drove right. him crazy. Right. And he told his designers to do it, and they said, you know, who cares? No one's ever going to look at it. And he gave that famous quote, you know, well, if you're a carpenter. You know, and you know, you're gonna, if you put a crappy piece of wood in the back of the dresser that you're making, then, you know, you're going to know about it. It's going to ruin it for you. And this is
wasn't
the
there a story of like Steve Jobs and his father where there, that very same scenario came up?
Yeah, I think so. It was you know, that was where he got that from. It was like, you know, you should do that your best on all sides.
So that, you know, it's high quality.
Right. So anyway, you know, so Johnny Ive, yeah, definitely. He's, you know, I think he has this public persona, and going back to the reason why the book is the way the book is because I think the stuff, the way they work, their design processes is something that Apple does not want to divulge to its competitors because it's a competitive advantage.
I mean, it's the one thing that Apple has that everyone else seems to lack.
Yeah, they copy the products, but you know, the products are really the product of a process.
Right.
And really what they should be copying is the process.
Exactly. Exactly. It's something that would allow them to create their own, or to, right. To be innovative in their own way.
Exactly. Exactly. Because, you know, the innovation, I mean, if you look at Apple's history, this book is an amazing testament to that. You know, that over 20 years, it has been one hit, one giant hit after another. And at the time, you know, like, just like the MacBooks now, you know, they were all heavily criticized. The iMac, the first iMac, the Bondi Blue iMac, you know, which is at the beginning of the book. I mean, people said that was doomed because it didn't have a floppy drive. Mm-hmm. It dispensed with a floppy drive. And people said, well, this is how people store their files. If you don't have a floppy drive, you can't use the computer. It is dead in the water. There was, a famous, I think, Hiawatha Bray in the Boston Globe. He was one of the big tech reviewers. He was like one of the Walt Mossbergs of that era. You know, and he said, this machine's doomed. It's doomed. And, you know, there was a whole bunch of, there was a whole bunch of controversy about that. But there was controversy about the iPod, the first right. iPod. Remember that? You know, it only worked with a Mac and it cost like, what, $4.99? And mm-hmm. people said that was, you know, like doomed. But then, you know, three, four, five generations later, when they made it compatible with Windows, you know, it took off like a rocket. And right. that was the product that transformed Apple. So, you know, like every single time, you know, all these products have had the same reaction. And of course, you know, they don't really explain why they do what they do, which is another frustrating thing.
Right. Right? Or apologize for it.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, Phil Schiller was saying that they experimented with a ton of touchscreen Macs. So they made OS X touch compatible to make, you know, laptops and desktops that you could control with your finger, like the Microsoft Surface, whatever it is. you know, they showed off. So Apple's been doing this experimentation, but you don't see it, and they don't talk about it, and they don't talk about this. You know, he just told Stephen Levy that they did this and made a couple of comments about it, but, you know, you don't see any of that effort. And I think this, you know, that's the kind of thing I think sometimes would ally a lot of their problems, if they detailed that stuff. But, you know, they don't. And it doesn't, and, you know, does it really matter? I don't know. Anyway, I think the book like this is a chance for them to kind of explain, you know, what they do. I'd love to do that. It's funny because it's in complete contrast to another book that the last design book that Johnny Ive collaborated on that I know of was Paul Kunkel's Apple Design, which is a complete opposite. This is it was another large format book, but it's almost, it's only got a few pictures in the middle. So it has an insert.
the rest is solid technical information. Yeah,
exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Lord.
So it's funny because it's the complete opposite. And it really is really, really detailed. And in fact, you know, it's dense and it's almost impossible to read. There's no narrative flow. It just talks about this product, that product, this product, in like kind of this kind of mind-numbing designer detail. And Johnny Ive makes an appearance towards the end of the book, you know, because he just got hired in the mid-90s, and he'd been working on the Newton and the 20th anniversary Mac, and so and I use some of that detail in my book and tell the stories of, like, you know, his early days in the studio and how he worked. But it's, you know, totally fascinating how they work and how they develop these products. But, you know, the new book is the complete opposite of that. Like it doesn't have any of that detail at all.
So the smaller size is $199. The bigger size is $299. They're both available at apple.com if you don't happen to get one sent to you personally autographed by Sir Johnny Ive. And you have to go out and buy your own like a total plebeian.
Right.
And if you like this book, I heard there's another one coming out in the next month or two called Dongled by Apple in California. It's going to be a compendium of all the different dongles Apple has made over the years. It's going to be 485 pages. Every page contains a picture of three or four different dongles, so they could fit it all nice and neatly into one book. And that book will also be
$399.
Yeah, it's going to be sold in pieces. Actually, they're going to break the book into full four parts, and you can buy them each for like $199. So, I think that's going to be a worthwhile investment for any Apple fan. Yeah, I want this book too, but for $300, I might have to wait till one of these shows up on eBay or something.
Right.
But it looks gorgeous. It looks really gorgeous. And, you know, one of the things I find interesting about the process of making this book is Johnny Ive said they actually had to go out and buy copies of Apple's old products in order to photograph them for the new book.
Right.
I just find this absolutely amazing, staggering. The Apple, specifically Steve Jobs, he didn't value keeping a version of every single piece of hardware that Apple created over the years. And as I mentioned earlier, Apple used to do this. And then when Steve Jobs returned to Apple in the 1990s, he gave Apple's historical archive to Stanford for their libraries. I have no idea why, because he said he didn't want Apple to be fixated on the past. A ex-Apple employee named David Pakman, who worked there in 1991 through 1997, he once emailed Steve Jobs to suggest Apple celebrate their 30th birthday, and he received a simple reply from Steve Jobs saying, "Apple is focused on the future, not the past, Steve." I mean, how terse is that, right? Right? Not even like a thanks or anything. It's just yeah, we don't do that. But it looks like things are changing. It looks like around 8 years ago, the company felt an obligation to go out and start building up an archive of every product it had released. So they certainly have the money to do this. I think Apple needs to put a Apple History Museum in the new Spaceship Campus.
Right.
Don't you think?
Well, there's actually a campaign to do that, but yeah, they've said, you know, they won't do it.
Have they outright said that?
I think so. I think they officially said that they weren't going to do that. They weren't interested in doing that.
Man. I don't know why. Somebody needs to preserve this stuff. Where else?
Well, the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, I think, has got a bunch of artifacts. And John Rubinstein, who was, you know, the ex head of hardware, he's pretty involved in that museum.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they've been collecting materials, I think.
But if I were Apple, I wouldn't trust this to a third party. I mean, you need to have like a Louvre-type museum within the Apple spaceship campus headquarters with this protected vault of all the Apple gear with, you know, beautifully designed German milled signage with low ghost inks, you know, explaining the story behind every single one of these pieces.
Well, that would be awesome, especially if they had all the prototypes too. You know, like they showed you like all the different things they used, the breadboards,
oh,
and
man,
then you know,
that
like
would be cool.
Some of the early prototypes, because I know a lot of those actually end up. There's a weird trade. There's like an underground, you know, fight club like group of people that collect prototypes, and they
we don't talk about that group.
Right, exactly. That's the first rule of that group.
That's the first rule.
But you know, quite frequently prototypes do leak out and they get, you know, traded on eBay and crazy.
Yeah,
some
you
of these
see those things on
stuff.
eBay. That is astounding to me. How does that stuff end up being thrown to the side like that? It's such important history.
Right.
Actually, I want to say we're Apple fans.
One more thing about the book and Steve Jobs, you know, I mean, it's getting a lot of criticism because it looks like, you know, like you said, you know, Steve never looked back. And this seems to be sentimental or ego stroking, you know, for Johnny Ive. And I think, you know, the reason that they're doing it is because they haven't had any credit really at all, any public recognition whatsoever, like when Steve was around. You know, Steve got all the credit. And I think the general perception of the public, not necessarily Apple fans, but, you know, in the wider world, the general idea is that, you know, Steve Jobs dreamed this up. Steve Jobs came up with the iPhone. Steve Jobs came up with the iPad.
Well, that's because he did, right?
Not exactly.
He woke up one night and he had the full schematics for the iPhone thought up in a
right,
dream.
Exactly. And he said, "Hey, Johnny, make this." It's okay, Steve. Right. It's you know, and they haven't had any you know, they've won a bunch of prodigious awards, and I think other designers know who they are, but the public certainly doesn't. They've had, you know, almost no recognition whatsoever. And I know that for a fact that this chaffs a lot of you know, Apple staffers. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they came up with this stuff and, you know, no one knows that they did it. No one knows where these ideas came from. And, like, you know, this, so I think, you know, this is a little bit of their way of, like, you know, claiming in a sort of gentle way without breaking any Apple's rules about, you know, disclosing or giving away secrets. It's a way of, like, putting their ownership on the stuff. You know, this is the stuff that we did. You know, this is our stuff, right? And it's dedicated to Steve Jobs, and he says in the introduction that, you know, none of this stuff would have existed without Steve. But it's a way of saying, you know, like putting a little bit of ownership on it. And I think that's fair enough.
I think it's important to chronicle the history of your company for new employees joining, because it can be part of your culture, right? It helps kind of form that identity that people get to have when they join Apple. And without that, without Steve Jobs, maybe that whole identity is somewhat lost.
Well, they do that, haven't they? They've done it with you know, the Apple University. Mm-hmm. Like they've created you know, they hired that guy from Harvard, Joel, what was his name? I can't remember. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but you know, he did exactly that. He created all these like Harvard Business School case studies. Mm-hmm. The case studies they're famous for with and there's an Apple University, just like Pixar University, that teaches, you know, new executives and managers, you know, how they did these things to try and maintain that internal culture. And I'm sure that's never leaked out. No one's ever seen those. So, you know, I don't know how detailed they are, but I imagine they are very, very detailed in a way that.
But there's one
isn't.
Thing to have a white paper, and there's another thing to walk into a room filled with 40 years of your company history and see everything. I mean, even Coke has a museum. I mean, you can go to the Coke Museum in Georgia and see all their different products and taste all their different products. You know, it's like, if Coke can have one, why not Apple? And I realize it's kind of dangerous in a way, and this is probably one of the reasons Steve Jobs maybe didn't want to focus on the past, is because then you, instead of being highly adaptable to the future, you are focused on who you were, and you don't want to break from that tradition.
Right.
Because tradition is so powerful. And so you end up maybe becoming, you know, like the Buick of your industry, where
right.
you're just creating stuff for grandpas.
Right.
You know, so I kind of get both sides of it, but I just think it would be amazing for Apple to have like one space where you could walk in and just be surrounded, like you said, with the iteration of these products over time, and you could see how they've changed. I find that stuff fascinating. I bet you everyone does.
Right.
At least anyone who loves Apple. Alrighty, well, I didn't think we would talk this long about a book, but there you have it. let's at least give a quick passing mention to the Cult-O-Mac Black Friday postbuster. You're keeping a chronicle of your own over there, isn't that right?
I guess, yeah.
Of all the best Black Friday deals.
Yeah, come get some.
Dude, oh, man. Well, it's one of my favorite days of the year.
I know. It's ridiculous. I don't like it at all.
But. What did you buy last year? Did you buy some Xbox or something?
Everything. I bought everything. I'm not going to buy stuff and resell it, though. I did that last year.
You're going to stop doing that?
I'm going to stop, yeah. It just didn't work out well, it turns into a nightmare, dude. Yeah, and there's way too many scammers on eBay. I had a bunch of people, like, charge back stuff that they bought and then try to, like, you know, scam you. So I was like, okay, I'm getting over my head here. I'm not going to do it. But I might be looking for a new TV this year.
Okay.
Since Samsung has practically been giving away their KS8000 4K television. I mean, they're having sales on that thing like you wouldn't believe. Xboxes are going to be discounted outrageously, and Buster's going to be keeping track of a lot of the stuff. You know, the stuff that applies to Apple fans too, like, you know, discounted iPads, MacBooks, MacBook Airs, and the like. So I'll link to that in the show notes if you're interested, and you can definitely keep checking back into it because Buster's going to be updating it. I guess the whole team's going to be updating it, right, Buster?
Every day.
Wow, every day.
New deals every day.
If I could also pimp another site that I love for just deals in general, and they're going to be going crazy on Black Friday, it's slickdeals.com. For those in the U.S. anyway, I don't know how this stuff affects people who aren't in the U.S. Unfortunately, I can't help you guys. But for people in the U.S., that's another great site, slickdeals.com. They're going to be... It's a community-driven site of people just looking for deals and helping each other like find the best ways to get discounts on stuff. But that's not usually Apple-focused. I mean, that's like everything, you know, lawn chairs, remote control cars, you know, PCs, everything. Okay, let's talk about drones, Buster.
Oh.
You got your hands on the Mavic Pro, the hotness.
Oh, such a sexy toy, man.
Man, I'm truly envious that you got one of those. I'm on the waiting list to get one, and there seems to be no end in sight when we're actually going to receive our orders, because DJI is getting so many of these orders, they're having a hard time fulfilling them, and they're backed up, like, what, I think 6 to 8 weeks, I read.
Yeah, you're pretty much not going to get one this year if you buy one now, I think.
But, and of course, DJI just updated their other drones too. The Phantom 4 now has a Phantom 4 Pro version, which has a better camera, a bunch of other smaller upgrades, a new remote control with an independent screen, and then the beauty, the monster, the Inspire 2 drone, which just looks like a beast, and I would love to own. But it's $3,000 without the camera.
Uh-huh.
Without the camera, dude. $6,000 bucks would include the camera.
The flight time's not that much better. I wonder why that one's so... It can handle a way better camera. That's why, huh?
That's exactly
it. It's just got the power.
It's got the... It has the power. And... Yeah, it can lift other kinds of cameras too, I believe, and then it can fly in much colder conditions, and it can fly almost 70 miles an hour.
Uh-huh.
So it's just a monster. But let's talk about the Mavic. So you've been using that. It's DJI's portable drone, and it's perfect for someone like you who goes on lots of wilderness hikes.
Yeah.
So what are you liking about it so far?
Oh, the it's just like a really cool piece of tech, man. Just like how it folds up, super small. It's actually super easy to fly too. I took it this weekend to go look at like some Indian ruins and waterfalls and stuff, and just carried it in my backpack. And actually, one of the guys I went with, he's a super hardcore ultra runner, and he has one. His pre-order already came in, so he has his, and he just carries it in a fanny pack. And this guy runs like crazy. Like, he does some insane trails, and he just has it in his fanny pack, goes like 10 miles, 12 miles on a trail, busts it out, gets some cool drone footage, and then heads back. So it's just amazing how light it is and how easy to use it is.
And that's the marquee feature for people that aren't familiar with drones, is most drones are huge, and this one, it folds down so compactly. You can actually fit it in a fanny pack, which I think you should absolutely try if you have never considered. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I'm going to get a fanny pack. I need one because it's so awesome. And everybody that's seen it so far, they just geek out. They're like, oh my gosh, that thing looks insane. Because it's super cool. And the smart features are really nice, because if you don't know how to fly, You can do stuff like just tapping on the horizon and it'll go straight to that point. You can have it track people. You can do selfies with gestures and stuff like that. There's tons of different smart features, which I think that's the best thing about it is the software.
Have you gotten to test any of that stuff out? Like specifically, I know you can like wave to it, right? And it will take a picture.
I haven't tested that one. I've tested like the tracking. I went out to the like the mountain park out here and just flew it and just started tracking random people. That was
random people. So you're on a little drone spy program running there.
So it just goes and follows them for a few minutes or whatever.
I mean, Leander, imagine never having to climb another tree to do your peeping Tommy. Right. You can see one of these things.
Super handy, yeah.
That's gonna be perfect for you. We got George McFly over here.
And you can take it like super far, so nobody even knows like where you are when you're flying it. A lot of the times,
that was the other thing I was going to ask about it, because they say it has a 4 mile range?
Yeah, close to
7 kilometer, 4 mile range, which is unbelievable. That is so far away. I mean, how far away from it have you gotten so far?
Okay, well, I broke it. Heads up.
What? You're kidding.
Yeah. Well, I was flying it the other day at Camelback Mountain, and I was flying around the mountain, and I think it got like it just the controller disconnected. I lost the live video, tried rebooting the app, and then I lost full connection to the drone. And so I think it tried to do the auto home sequence after it lost connection for 10 seconds. And so it turned around and it hit a cliff, and it still flew back to me even though it hit the cliff, but the gimbal wire got broken on it and some of the propellers.
No.
So I got to send it to the DJI repair shop. It still flies and everything, but there's no video.
It just has a camera dangling from the bottom?
No, the camera's fine. It's just like it just hit the rock perfectly where one of the wires busted. So it like doesn't get power to the gimbal anymore or the video feed.
So the camera still works, you just can't churn it.
No, it doesn't work at all. I can't get power to it. So, So I was super bummed about that. So I have to ship it back and get it fixed now.
Man. But you know, it's funny. Casey Neistat had the same thing. Well, a similar thing happened.
Yeah, I would say that it's buggy. And I would wait to buy it until next year, until they get the kinks worked out. Because the other guy that I told you about that carries his in a fanny pack, when we were on our hike, he was flying his and the video just totally blacked out on him. And you can't see where the drone's at. You can't control it. You can initiate like the come home sequence to get it back. But, you know, it keeps happening to me too, where just the video goes out sometimes. And I get some weird warnings like it's missing a propeller when it's not.
Yeah, the drone tech, man, it's definitely not ironed out yet. I know GoPro released their Karma drone.
Yeah.
And then those things have just been spontaneously just falling from the sky. They just stop working and fall from the sky and land on whoever's down there.
So they had to recall all of them, GoPro did.
Yeah, right.
And so, yeah, I mean, I would sit it out for a little bit just because it does seem like the software has some issues. I even did firmware updates, reset the drone, recalibrated all the sensors and stuff, and it still had some problems. So,
damn.
That would be my only gripe with it was the software is a little pre-ordered. I think most of it'll all get fixed with software updates is the thing, and that's
the
big key.
I think you're probably right.
Yeah, is software is the biggest thing about the drone now. Is it's the hardware. The camera's good. The video's gorgeous. The 4K video. I would say the stills from the 12 megapixel camera are kind of not that great, but they can get the job done.
You just probably have to really be intentional on the type of lighting conditions and stuff.
Yeah.
To fly it in so you can take the best type of pictures. I mean, that's the thing. Is it? It's a micro four thirds lens or sensor, I should say, isn't it?
I don't even know. I think it's really more the equivalent of like an iPhone 6S sensor.
Oh,
it's more like that, which it looks good. And like you said, lighting wise, if you fly directly into the sunlight, it looks horrible. So you have to be conscious about that. And there's other times where if you have too much light You'll start seeing like propeller shake on the sides of the images for some reason. So it does have like a few quirks that you have to get used to.
That said, I have seen quite a few YouTube videos reviewing the Mavic. And I mean, that video that I was going to send you that you said you had already watched, where that guy was like hiking through the mountains and like the sun was setting.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how good that footage looked. It looked like movie footage.
Oh, dude. And it's so fun to fly it too. Like, I've never flown a drone before, and so I was worried I was going to break it. But it's just like flying, like playing a video game.
You were worried you were going to break it, huh? Not worried enough.
Yeah. I don't think it was my fault why it broke, though. That's all I'm saying. I think it was the software.
Yeah, glitched out on me. It flew itself into the mountain.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
It was only a matter of time. It was only a matter of time. I mean, well, that's really true with the software. You're flying a drone that's, you know, 2 miles away from you, right? It's like there's not much you can do when it's that far away from you. It has to kind of manage itself at that point. So, yeah, you're not alone. Casey Neistat had his disappear.
Yeah, it just dropped into the ocean. Yeah,
it just turned itself off and dove into the water.
Did it
which really kind of makes you nervous. It's not a cheap gadget.
Exactly. That's why it's like, oh, it's a flying camera and everything. But yeah, anything goes wrong, like a bird comes and hits it or something like that. Or just you put
gonna pull a Fabio, huh?
I was flying it to some ruins. I didn't want to go all the way across the canyon because it would have been like 2 miles of hiking extra, and I was super tired, but you could see them from the side that I was at pretty close. So I just put my drone in the air and flew it over to the other side of the canyon to check out the ruins. And then I tried to do like the return home thing, but I actually accidentally hit just the land button because they're right side by side. And so it was like just going down, and I like saw on the remote that the drone says it was like lower than me now. I was like, oh crap, cancel that.
So could you accidentally like land this thing on a lake like that was a mile away if you accidentally hit the wrong button?
I think so. Yeah, if you hit the wrong button,
it would try to land itself.
Yeah, and you're not paying attention, because then my friend, he was like, "Dude, you should cancel that because it's just gonna drop on that other side." So I did, and we got it back just fine. But
so you were able to cancel the command before it actually landed itself.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you end up getting one of these, you got to get it insured somehow. That's what I'm going to do.
They do have a little program, I think. I can't remember how much it costs, but it's basically kind of like Apple Care Plus, where if you break the drone, you ship it back. And I think it only the first time it's 70 something to replace it or something like that. And then the second replacement's $120 or something.
Gee, they really are mimicking Apple, aren't they?
And I've heard from other DJI owners that have the other drones that they're like, oh yeah, the service is super fast. They're always pretty, you know, cool about everything. So I'll see how it goes when I ship it, you know, today, and see how long it takes them to fix it and everything.
Do you got to pay to ship it back to them, or they give you a label?
Yeah, they give you a UPS label and everything. Oh, so yeah, super nice.
Yeah, cool. Everything about that company just reminds me of Apple, like the way they do their hardware presentations now. You have the guy with the round glasses and the little beard and the skinny jeans standing up there, you know, trying to be cool, giving the presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that company is so polished. It really reminds me of Apple a lot. I think they're definitely trying to emulate Apple.
And they integrate, you know, the software with the hardware too, which is super important because you can do, like, there's really just not a great drone for just average people. And I think this one's the first one that will make drones really popular.
Like really approachable.
Yeah, for sure.
Everyone's just going to be flying, walking around with drones following them.
Yep.
It's going to take the selfie to a whole new level.
Exactly. Because you can do that, like the follow me mode, just have it at eye level and just walk around with it tagging
along.
And
it circles you too while you're going up.
Yeah, you can choose that if you want. And you
does
can,
it have collision avoidance?
Yeah, it does. And so it can tell if there's something ahead of it or something below it. So
unless that something is
doesn't
a cliff.
Doesn't work with mountains, though?
Yeah, I don't know. See, it should have. I was looking at the video of what happened. I was recording it. And so it just turned around, and then it like did an arc, and it went into the mountain. So I don't know why it hit it that time.
It had enough. Fear. It had enough of your shenanigans, dude.
Yeah, it was exactly a suicide mission, yeah.
The NSA had probably hacked it. It was trying to get some footage, and they accidentally controlled it the wrong way. That's probably what happened right there. Anyway, that's the Mavic Pro. I'm on the wait list for mine, and I'm super excited. I can't wait to get it, but you know, it's probably going to be another 3 months here. We should probably go ahead and wrap it up there. We'll have another show coming to you guys next week. We're not taking a break for Thanksgiving or anything. I know sometimes people wonder about that, but we don't take breaks here. I don't think we've ever taken a single break. And we're not about to start now. That's all the CoolCast we have for you guys this week. If you want to come say hi to us on Twitter, we would love your attention and affection. I'm at Aerofon, Buster's BST3R. Leander is L. Caney. If he doesn't get back to you right away, just remember he's probably hanging out with Johnny Ive, you know, getting into the jailhouse or something, getting in a few fights, eh, Governor? This has been the CoolCast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation. You're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the CoolCast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Now that would be an epic night. Go to the pub with Johnny Ive. He's like, and he's just like telling you about Apple products, and like he looks over at some two guys. He's like, I think we should fight those guys. And you're like, what? He's like, you heard me.
Yeah, come on, get up.
Come on, Gab. He opens his jacket, puts on a pair of brass knuckles.
Yeah. I'll ball him and then you chin him.
'Kicking it. You know me. What's going on with you?
Nothing. Just...
That's too bad.
Swerking, you know?
Swerking.
Yeah.
That sounds like a new dance move.
Yeah. Sexy one. Yeah. For the ladies.
Damn. Is that guy swerking?
Uh-huh.
Sexy.
Give it to me.
That needs to be something that we see in a rap video.
Uh-huh.
For sure. You should be teaching courses on that. Buster Swerks. The hot new
workout
dance workout routine, yeah. Sweeping the nation.
It's just me and a big man leotard. My tiny package lightly bulging
with a huge poof of hair coming out the top. Technically, it's just twerking. It's just 10 times faster.
Yeah.
You got to make sure you're bent over exactly 90 degrees and. You got to pick up the pace. Then it goes from twerking to
boom.
Swerking.
Boom. Yeah. It's hardcore twerking, basically.